So this week is quite important because it's Parshat Maaseh and Parshat, and on top of that we finish Sefer Bamidbar, and on top of that the people in the diaspora finally catch up with us. So that's really quite important. The truth is, it's not that they catch up with us as much as we ran ahead of them. Those who don't remember or who don't realize, the Gemara speaks about two different systems. One system was the Babylonian system, which was which was finishing the Torah every year. The other was the system of Eretz Yisrael, which was a triennial system where they would finish the Torah every 3, or more likely every 3.5 years. So why is this relevant? Is that essentially the one-year system doesn't always work in Eretz Yisrael because we don't have the eighth day, and therefore either by Pesach or by Sukkot, it can happen every couple of years, that we ended and we already read the next parsha when they don't. So it's not, you know, everybody asks, why don't, you know, they catch up to us? It's that they're doing the proper thing, and it's a system which was never made for Eretz Yisrael. How's that for something? It just wasn't made for here. Could you make arrangements that you catch up much quicker? You could, but I'm just saying this is essentially the Babylonian system, which was put together a very long time ago and wasn't put together for Eretz Yisrael. And I guess for many years, when people didn't travel or didn't communicate like we do today, nobody really cared, and now people care. One of the things which we always seem to come back to, which I think is one of the major tools that we can use when we try to analyze Sefer Bamidbar, are the laws within the book. Which means Bamidbar as a whole is not a book about laws. It's a book about narrative, but it's a book about narrative with lots and lots of laws along the way. Again, you don't need me to go into do too much of this. Bereishit is a book about narrative, which only has a sprinkling, a couple of laws. And Shmod is a book which really combines the two, but laws which are presented, for the most part, we see exactly why they're coming in at that particular point. At least we hope we do. Vayikra is really a book about laws. Okay, what do we do this Mishkan, Torah Kohanim, and then moving over to other kind of laws, which is essentially a book about holiness. And then Bamidbar goes back to the narrative, but it's a narrative which has more laws than we expect. And at first glance, we're not always convinced we know why the laws are there, even though I don't think it's always that difficult. I really believe that if you read the narrative and read the law, you say, that's why that's being introduced at this point. And I will not give any examples to that. Here, towards the end, one of the things that we find is Perek Lamed Hey, which we have in front of us. Vayidbar Hashem al Shelemor, Debar Bnei Yisrael, Amarta Lehem, Ki Atem Ovrim Et HaYarden Aretz HaKanaan. So the first thing that we note about this is that here is a law which is being presented as something which you need to know, you need to do, you need to be aware of, you need to practice when you enter into the land of Israel. This is something where it's almost, when you have a verse like that, it almost sounds conditional. Oh, you're going to go in, this is what you need to do. I don't want to push that too far. V'kritim lachem arim arei miklat, tiena lachem nas, v'shama nas shama rotzeach makeh nefesh bishkaga. And you're going to create cities, which are cities of refuge, whereby somebody can escape or run away to somebody who is called a rotzeach. Now, had I not known better, I would have translated rotzeach as a murderer, right? Ritzicha as murder and hariga as killing, which is probably true within modern Hebrew. I would have thought that that's the case in biblical Hebrew as well, although I will assure you that I did not look too much into this. But the word retzach is quite strong, and it's used many, many times in this section, almost always, not exclusively, to describe somebody who killed by accident. Rotzeach makeh nefesh bishgaga, somebody who's a murderer who took another life accidentally. He has a place to run away to, and you can't just go kill him. He needs his day in court. It'll continue and tell us, but if there are cases of real murder and so on, so those are cases that need to be tried. So what's interesting over here is, why are these laws being presented at this particular juncture? That's just really very quickly, very simply the question. And it could be that in your minds there are some really easy answers to this. I'll skip a little bit down the line. Pasuk Lamed, Komak Nefesh Lefi Edim, Yirtzach Et Harotzeach. And anybody who took a life in front of witnesses, that person will be put to death. But you can't use one witness, you need two. You can't be bribed and let someone off the hook. There's another thing about this is that when the person runs away to the Ir Miklat, he is there and he must stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. Vilo tachin tachanifu et haaretz asher etem ba, ki adam hu yachanif et haaretz. Vila aretz lo yichupar ladam asher shupach ba, ki im bedam shofcho. Vilo tatame et haaretz asher etem yoshvim ba, asher ni shochin betocha, ki ini Hashem shochin betoch b'nei Yisrael. Now, those of us who are not used to those kinds of broad, strong statements, this is a good ending. This is a good ending statement. This, you know, this is what you must do and don't do this and make sure. But the statement really is over here, do not allow the land to become defiled. And the land will become defiled if blood is spilled. And it reminds us, Ki ani Hashem shochein b'toch b'nei Yisrael. So I, God, dwell within the Jewish people. So the impression over here is that if you spill blood, that can cause the Shekhinah to move away. That can cause us to go into Galut. If we allow innocent blood to be killed and don't punish the person who is guilty, that's also a problem. That was the previous verse before, which means the larger issue over here is the taking of life. The larger issue over here are situations either of accidental death or of deliberate murder. What we're being told over here is that these are the types of events which can't be ignored. They need to be responded to. The first thing that we see over here is this idea that the person who killed by accident runs away, goes off into some type of an exile, if you will, which could very well be, I don't know, let's call it an avtipus, a prototype, or bezir anpin, microcosm, of if the whole nation is guilty of taking of lives, they go into exile. This may very well be the interrelationship. As far as the problem with taking of a life, let's just look for a moment at source number two. V'achet imchem lenafshotechem edrosh, miyad kol chaya edroshenu, miyad adam, miyad ish achiv edrosh et nefesh adam. God says, I will cause people to be responsible, animals to be responsible, people to be responsible for the taking of life. Shofech dam, if you ever wondered where the term comes from, shfichut damim, the spilling of blood, so it is a biblical term. Shofech dam, adam, ba'adam, damo yishafech. If a person caused the spilling of blood, their blood should be spilled. Why? And this is one of the few times the Torah actually gives us what we call ta'amei ha-mitzvot, or the reason for it. Why? Ki b'tzelem elokim asat adam. Because a person is created in the image of God. So a person in the image of God has been killed. Therefore, the person who killed them has, in a sense, I don't want to say that they've killed something divine, because I would not write divine with a capital D over here. I would say ki b'tzelem elokim. There's an echo of the divine. But that person has forfeited their life. That's really what it's saying over here. There's a forfeit of life taking place when a person spills blood. In source number four, the Kli Yakar raises a question which really should trouble us a little bit. Because one of the things that we like to do is to find biblical precedent for laws which we're being told. And the first murder that took place, of course, was the murder which was done by Cain. He kills Hevel. And as far as we can tell, he does it deliberately. Whether there were actually two witnesses was probably going to be a technical problem to find two witnesses that were not related to him at that point. Although it is interesting that God gives him a certain type of warning before, not to murder, but he does give him a certain type of a pep talk, we can say. What his punishment is that he needs to run away. So the Kli Yakar is troubled over here. And we'll read the verses in source 3 in a moment. Let's read them first then. Source 3, Vayomer Shem al Kayin, Ehevel Achicha, Vayomer lo yadati, Hashem Arachi Enochi, where's your brother? He goes, I don't know. Am I brother's keeper? Of course, the answer is, yes, you're your brother's keeper. That's why I was asking you. Right? I'm God. I'm asking you, where's your brother? What's, you know? Vayomer Ma'asita kol Dumei Achicha Tzokim Alay Min Adama. which is also interesting in terms of the sign-off that we had at the end of Bamidbar, or towards the end of Bamidbar, is that if you kill, then the earth will become defiled, and so on. So you have over here also a response in terms of the earth. Over there it was, v'lota tameya ta'aretz, and over here it is, you know, what have you done? So again, the land itself has some kind of a response. So again, you are cursed from the land. The word Adama now becomes so much more interesting because you have Adama and you have Adam in Adama and you have Dam, which is connected to Dam and Adam and Adama, all over here and all of those things being connected. Asher patzta pilakacha d'mei achicha miyadecha. Kita avod et adama, when you work the land, lo tosef tet kocha lach navnad tia ba'aretz. On the one hand, the land will no longer respond to your reaching out to it. As a farmer, you're going to try to do things. The land is not going to be responsive to you. And on top of that, navnad tia ba'aretz. You now have to go and wander the land. So we've pointed out previously that he was the farmer, and Cain was the shepherd. Shepherds seemed to go around wandering place to place. So now part of his punishment is that he now needs to become his brother, his life he has taken. V'yomer Cain el Hashem gadol avoni min so, that, you know, my sin is too much to bear. So is he talking about the actions that he's done, or is he talking about the punishment which he's now received? What is it that has troubled him so much? Which means he could have said, my sin is so great, I've taken a life, but he doesn't say that. My sin is so great, and look at this, I've been chased away. And whoever finds me can go and kill me. I want to pause over here, and just to think about the connection between this and the first source that we saw. And there's another thing which is hiding behind all of this, which probably, hopefully, you're thinking about, but we'll come back to. But we have over here a sin, which, to be honest, is one of the, we can debate which is the worst sin another person can do. The Rambam in at least one place writes that taking of a life is the worst sin that a person can do. And we understand for a rationale for that, because it's something which can't be undone in any way, and it's very, very permanent. You can say, I'm sorry, that doesn't bring the person back to life. Over here, again, we find that Cain is completely, he disassociates in terms of the person who's dead. What do I do? He's just dealing with himself now. Although, could be that a good lawyer, aside from putting a yarmulke on his head when he goes to court, would have had him express some type of remorse for what he did, but there's no remorse itself. Only thing that he's upset about is the punishment. And the punishment indeed is a dysfunctionality between him and the land, and something which he needs to leave, he needs to wander, he can no longer be home. So therefore, if we go back to the end of Bamidbar, you know, when you come to the land, realize here's a law that you need to keep, and even the accidental taking of a life is something which is severe. Certainly the deliberate taking of life is something which is severe, and not dealing with the laws properly, taking bribes or somehow the legal system breaking down and letting murderers walk around, that's something which is considered to be really abhorrent. And moreover, there is this problem, and again, Pasuk Lamed Dalet in Perek Lamed Hey, v'lo titameya ta'aretz, as atem yoshvim ba. Do not cause tum'ah, do not cause impurity. Asher ani shochein b'tocha, which seems to be the rationale for it. Why? Because I dwell over here, which maybe then reminds us of source number two, Pasuk Vav. Shofech dam adam ba'damo, damoy shofech ki b'tzelem ukim asat adam, because I dwell within the person. Don't do this to the land, because I dwell in the land. Don't do this to the person, because I dwell within the person. And over here you have a parallel then, where God is saying, if you kill somebody, therefore you cause the neshama to be extinguished, and you cause God, the godly aspect of this person to leave, and now you just have a dead body over there. Well, the same thing's going to happen within the land. I dwell within the land. If murders take place within the land, I am going to leave the land, and therefore there won't be any Shekhinah over there. And maybe now we see a much deeper connection between these two concepts, which we're being told now really is, in fact, one concept. Now, the Kliyakar is going to get a little technical on us, and he's going to be troubled by something. If I read carefully through source number one, I realize there's two different systems, although this one may fall in between. What are the two different systems? Well, one is, or two different aspects, or two different laws. One is if a person kills deliberately, the other person kills accidentally. When you kill accidentally, then you run away. You go to the Ir Miklat, and you need to leave Galut and so on. When, on the other hand, you kill deliberately, then you should be put to death. So, of course, we have a problem in terms of witnesses and warning and so on, which is a technical legal problem. On the other hand, we have God involved in the system. So if God is in the system, if God is micromanaging over here, so then that should solve all kinds of technical problems. It could be a court that without two witnesses doesn't know what really took place, and that's what gives us the knowledge. Well, it could be more than that, but it could be, on the other hand, that God knows exactly what goes on, and therefore God should deal with it. But what's the problem? Why is Cain, who kills deliberately, being treated as if he had killed accidentally? So that's what bothers the Kliyakar, and the answer he gives is that basically we had no choice. The reason that he couldn't be killed is because it would have severely impacted the world's population. In fact, he actually overstates his argument, and he says things I don't believe to be true. He says they were the only two people in the world at the time. Again, I don't believe that to be the case, because then we would have other problems as well. But even if he overstates it, we understand his point, is that even though, you know, normally this is what would happen, the Yeshua Olam is that, okay, the world is brand new and we need to keep a couple people around here, and getting rid of Cain, well, what it would have really meant, even if he's right, it would have meant, it could be he's right, but he overstates it. But we'll leave it at that. I mean, God could have started all over again. That's also, I mean, we're told this great midrash that God created worlds and destroyed worlds. I know, and that's why it's a little hard to say that because of Yeshua Olam, and for that matter, you know, we wouldn't have all the villains in Sefer Bereishit if we didn't have Cain and his children afterwards, right? We certainly need these people. I mean, you can't have a, if you say I didn't realize. On the other hand, you know, he's. You look at the physical world, you know, we think today we're so much more sophisticated than the old, and we know a lot more in terms of technology, but they were wonderful in terms of observation. You think there was no animal that had ever died at that point? You thought nothing had ever died? Maybe. I think that's a harder argument to make, right? So it's a little harder to make the argument that nothing had ever died at this point. Source number five is going to be a little bit closer to what I hope you were thinking about. We know that there are, or at least we're told, that there are three sins that the Jews committed which destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash, right? Shfichut Damim is one of them. The other two are Gilui Ariot and Avodat Kochavim, Avodah Zarah. So sexual sins, idolatry, and the spilling of blood. So over here, the spilling of blood has been framed in a way that if you're guilty of this, it's going to cause... God who dwells among the people, it's going to cause the earth to become tameh. So this is a very strong statement. So I would be willing to say that the reason this is mentioned at this juncture, towards the end of Bamidbar, again, this is almost at the very end of Bamidbar, is to make this dramatic statement that this is one of the sins that people can do that will cause the Shekhinah to stop. I'll go even further. There's two different types of death over here. One is murder, deliberate, and one is not deliberate. Maybe, and this is something which you need to think about a lot today, maybe in a society which is about to become armed, go to war, right? There's going to be a whole military side. You're going to have a whole bunch of people who are trained to take lives. Maybe specifically in that type of society, we need there to be an emphasis that taking a life by accident even, due to negligence, is something which calls upon an inquiry and calls upon a response, which means we cannot tolerate deaths which we understand were accidental, but accidents take place because there is a lack of concern for human life. Now, maybe you're going to tell me that that statement wasn't fair, right? Maybe you'll say that there are some cases which really there is no, you know, it was just an accident. On the other hand, there are lots of accidents where there is a human element to it, where something could have or should have been done, and there's no accident. I understand, but there are accidents. There are accidents. There are actions that take place where there's a lack of intention. The question is, okay, what could I have done in order to decrease the chances of, one of the things that the Israeli army is most concerned about, maybe this will come as a surprise to you, one of the things they're most concerned about is what the kids are going to do when they get out for the weekend on a Friday night. So if you start to think about it, if they've been exhausted all week and they're going to get out and they're going to drive and they're going to drink and if they're going to have their weapons with them, one second, just put all that together. If you're going to drive and you're going to drink and have your weapons with you, do you realize what kind of recipe for disaster that could be? Okay, so you may want to change one of those things. You may want to say, well, make sure that you don't drink. Well, a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds will get out for the weekend, may very likely be drinking. This happens all over the world. So then maybe you need to sit down and talk to them. Well, if you're going to go out and drink, then make sure you don't drive as a designated driver. If you're going to be drinking, make sure you're not bringing your weapon with you. Make sure your weapon is put away someplace. Because, again, there are very simple things. They make them get full night sleeps before they let them out. They have, I'm not saying they always follow this, but there is a certain amount of sleep that a kid needs to get before they'll let them out on a Friday. And they'll put them to bed earlier on Thursday nights in order to say, yeah, they got a good night's sleep. Because otherwise, you have a recipe for disaster. And the army loses more people on Friday nights than they lose, than they lose the rest of the week put together. Because that they're, again, it's just a bad combination of things. And again, religious soldiers who don't go out on a Friday night, you don't even realize how much that pushes them in terms of safety. It pushes them on a certain side within this whole evaluation because, again, they're not there. They're not going to be as exhausted. Their mothers will feed them too much, and then they'll go to sleep, and then they'll sleep too much the next day and so on. And maybe they'll go out with friends on Saturday night, and maybe then they'll be exhausted on Sunday morning, right, which is also going to be a part of it. But I'm just saying is that a society, especially a society where young people will have weapons, you need to really think about that in terms of taking proper precautions. And now maybe the way that I just now framed this, you think about this, okay, they're about to enter the land, the young people, they're going to have weapons, so we need to make sure that they know how to take care of their weapons because it's very easy to make mistakes. It's very easy for tragedies to take place. And again, there are certain tragedies that place in life that most of us looking at it say, well, I don't know how that could have been avoided. So I agree with you that from a theological perspective, and you're throwing theology into this because you're a religious fanatic, right? Yeah, right. It's okay. You're not the only one over here. And okay, that's theology, but I'm talking on a practical level. So on a practical level, so you can look at this, oh, what do you mean? You weren't wearing a seatbelt? Okay. You have a seatbelt. You never check the air on your tires. Well, you got to check the air on your tire. I'm saying there are certain things where, quote unquote, accidents happen where maybe a lot more could have been done. But then there were some things that there's nothing that you could have done. It was, you know, that other person caused the problem and you're just the victim involved in this. So the victim, maybe there was something the other one could have done. But still, I've said enough about this because I think that you get my point. My point is that maybe specifically now, as we have started fighting, we've started to capture things. We've given out weapons. We have changed in terms of society to one where there is this ability to take lives. So maybe now specifically there is this talk, but it also says when you cross into this land, this is something that we need to be careful about because the land itself, again, I don't want to move away from the land in terms of all this. It's not just the militaristic aspect. It's the land itself won't tolerate this, and I think that I pointed that out I think correctly in terms of the parallel between the human being and the soul and between the land itself and the Shekhinah within it. So we're going to stop and we're going to go back to what I hope you were thinking about and as I started to say it, that it's not just taking of life. There were these two other laws also. And here's where I want to pause a second and think. When the rabbis tell us, and most likely the rabbi who this is connected to specifically is somebody named Rav Yochanan ben Turta. There's a Tosefta where it says, Rav Yochanan ben Turta says, the Gemara also has his name, and then like it's a bunch of lines go by, so you don't realize it was still him speaking. He's the one who said that because of these three sins, the first temple was destroyed. And the second temple is, of course, of Sinat Chinam, because people hated one another without justification. So is this just an observation of a post-second temple rabbi who's looking at it and saying, well, I think this is what they did wrong? It's also interesting, he himself was a convert, and therefore he's saying, you know, I think this is what they did wrong, and he's looking and he's saying, and he actually says, we knew these people, and they were like this, this, and this, but he's looking and saying, I think these were their mistakes. So now it's very interesting. So post-Second Temple perspective, is that somehow borne out in the text itself? Which means, is this a biblical observation that he's making because he's read the Chumash carefully, or is this a social observation that he's making? Was he saying is that, oh, I know what happened, and this is, you know, this is how I understand the events, or is he saying that this is something, these are the rules that were set up? So what I'm suggesting right now, when we get to the end of Bamidbar, one of these rules is put in place, and that rule is, note, the Shekhinah is in the land. One of the ways of causing expulsion of the Shekhinah is to murder. And if a person even killed by accident, they need to be expelled from their home in order that the Shekhinah is not expelled. Why? Because when life was taken, then the divine within the individual has been expelled. So again, that I think is very, very tight, and it all goes together. But now the question is, okay, how much does this relate to what we learned because of these three sins, which then leads me to source number five. Source number five is smack in the middle of Sefer Vayikra. It's at this point that somehow, very quietly, we kind of moved away from laws having to do with the Mishkan itself. We thought that's what it's about. You know, we start with the Korbanot, and then we moved up to other things. We moved at some point to Tumah and Tahara. And the Tumah and Tahara was being presented in such a way, this is what caused distance from the Mishkan, right? Somebody who's Tameh can't go. And then it talks about food, also in terms of Tumah and Tahara, and which we could have questioned a little bit, and then moved into issues of sexuality. In source number five, the way that it frames it, it starts off and says, K'mas eretz Mitzrayim eshe yashavtem b'lo tasu. Don't follow the practices of this place that you dwelled in Egypt. Ukemas eretz Kanan asher ani mevi etchem shama lo tasu uvechukotehem lo telechu. Don't follow the practices of Egypt. Don't follow the practices of the Canaanites. Right, and it says uvechukotehem lo telechu, which is I would say is a famous verse, something that we are familiar with. And what does it mean that you can't do? You can't do something which has no reason, rationale, logic behind it, simply because that's what others do, because if something has logic, then it's not a chok. Continue. There was a famous tshuva of the Maharik, which is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. Could a doctor wear a white coat? This is hundreds of years ago. Oh, the non-Jewish doctors wear the white coat. He goes, yeah, but that way you know he's a doctor, right? That's how you know that this is the guy who's a doctor in the wars. Yeah, that's not a chok. There's a reason for it. So it doesn't fit into chukotayim lo telechu, which is like a starting point in terms of Jewish clothing, non-Jewish clothing. No, there's logic in it. We can talk about that in many issues. Continue. Ushmartim et chukotai vet mishpotai asher yaseh otam ha'adam v'chai behem ani Hashem. Don't follow their practices. I guess I skipped a pasuk there. Et mishpotai tasu vet chukotai tishmor lechet behem ani Hashem alkechem. Don't follow their practices. God says follow my practices. And then it goes into this whole discussion where you're going to see we're going to skip most of it. Pasuk vav, ish ish el kol She'er b'saro lo tikrova l'galot erva ani Hashem, which starts off into this whole discussion of all the forbidden sexual relationships. When it ends, after, I'm sorry, I've spared you the whole list, those of you who want to find out what you cannot do, go back to Vayikra. Pasuk Kafdalad, though, signs off by saying, Al titzma'u b'kol eile. Do not become impure with this. Now, I want you to note that back in Source 1, in Pasuk Ladad, V'lo titameh ta'aretz, over here, again, it uses the word tum'ah. This is not the same tum'ah that was being presented before. Because the tum'ah, in terms of all the bodily function tum'ot, created a distance from the Mishkan and was very, very technical. You go this amount of days and you sprinkle this, or you do this, or you look at the door, you look at the house, right, you look at the bird. Those were all laws of Tum'ah, which had to do with the physical world. Over here it says, if you do this, you're creating a type of Tum'ah. If you will, you can look at source number 12. The Malbim writes, V'kiper al kodesh mitumot b'nei Yisrael, which is actually a verse having to do with the Avodah on Yom Kippur. Kfar Biarnu, I already explained, sheyishnei minei tum'ot. There's two types of tum'ah. I'm sorry for not translating it. Tum'ah hagviyah, tuma that has to do with the body. Shehu hefech tahara. The opposite of that tuma is tahara. V'tuma hama'asim shehu hefech kedusha. And then there is the tuma in terms of behavior, which is the opposite of holiness. So now, just keeping that in mind and going back now to source number five, Pasuk of Dalet, Al titmu b'kol eile, don't cause tum'ah. This is not the technical type of tum'ah, which is the opposite of tahara. Ki be'eile nitma'u agoyim asher ni mashaleich mepneichem. Because this is what they did. Again, that's the way it was presented at the beginning. Don't follow the Canaanite practices, because that's why they're being kicked out. V'titma ha'aretz v'afkod avona alea, v'taki ha'aretz et yoshveha. Because this will cause the people in the land to be expelled. But the language, as you realize, is much stronger than that. This will cause the people to be vomited out. So, you know, when I said a little while ago that, you know, we have these three laws, and, you know, this post-Second Temple rabbi looks and says, oh, these are the three laws that cause the exile to take place. So now we have two of them, and the two of them have something really interesting in common. And what is it that it has in common? Both of them speak the same language. They speak this language as that if that what does spilling of the blood do? V'lo titamea ta'aretz, right? Ki ani Hashem shochein b'toch b'nei Yisrael. And the implication is that by being mitameh, you cause the Shekhinah to be expelled. Over here as well, we find that these are the things which cause tum'ah to take place. And again, this second type of tum'ah, and this is what will cause you to be vomited out, right? And it says v'titamea aretz v'lo pasukachet v'lo taki ha'aretz. Etchem bitumatchem ota, and again it comes back. Kikol asher yasemi kol toivota eile v'nichvetu nefeshvado osot mikerev amam u'shmartim et mishmarti levolti asot michukot toivota shenei asher naasu lefnechem v'lo titamu bahem ani Hashem alkechem. Essentially telling us that these types of behavior causes tum'ah, causes the land to be defiled, and therefore will cause you to be exiled. So again, when we have Rav Yochanan Turta looking back and saying, oh, these are the three sins which caused exile, so now we see two of them are right here. Now, again, the first, we're going to go back in the biblical order, is this law having to do with relationships, which is their right smack in the middle of Vayikra. When we get to the end of Vayikra, where we have our whole section of Tochacha, we may find something else. But let's take a look not that far. In source number six, here it's talking about pagan idolatrous practices. The specific one which is being spoken about is Molach. Vani atenet panai ba ishahu v'achreti oto mikerev amo. Ki mizaro natan l'molech leman tamei et mikdashi ulechalel et shem kodshi. So over here again, it talks about a sin where the behavior or the performance of the sin causes tum'ah. The difference over here is it didn't say ha'aretz. Rather, what did it say? It said mikdashi. So what does mikdashi mean in this case? Simple reading, I would have thought, is the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash. The Rashi actually says it's Knesset Yisrael. That Rashi is very interesting, which will require, it's not here, I don't think, which require analysis. But if this says that v'lotame et mikdashi v'lechalel et shem kodshi, it signs off this section at the end, you know, people who've turned to the ovot and the yidonim and so on, v'hitkadishtem v'yitem kedoshim k'ni Hashem alkechem u'shmartem et chukotai v'asitem otam ani Hashem mikadishchem. So over here, this section talks about defilement or tum'ah takes place when one does avodah zarah, which then, as far as we're concerned, you know, we have all three. Although I do want to point out that I don't have to work so hard in order to say, oh, look, if somebody's guilty of this type of sin, it's going to cause tum'ah, and that then could cause exile. Essentially, I can just give you your homework for next week. Read all of Sefer Devarim. Because that really is the theme of Sefer Devarim over and over and over again. You enter into this land. Don't do Avodah Zarah. You do Avodah Zarah, then your stay is going to be very short. I'm going to give you one example, Source 8, and there is no reason for me to choose this example over any other example, but I did because I wanted one. Im shachoach tishkach et Hashem Elokecha, v'alachta acharei Elohim acherim, v'avadatem v'ashtachavitim lahem, ha'i'oti b'chem hayom ki oved to'evdun. So maybe that wasn't strong enough. Maybe here it didn't use the word tum'ah, and over here it didn't say that you defiled the land, but it does say I'm going to completely wipe you out. And you read this as a follow-up to what we already saw in Vayikra. You realize what's going on, but this isn't isolated. Moshe, in his speech in Devarim, comes back to this again and again and again and again. So therefore, I think we can say now with a little bit more confidence that this perspective that Yochim and Torta has, that these three sins cause the destruction, that's a very biblical analysis. This is really a close reading of Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Bamidbar and Sefer Dvarim. Again, just think about that for a second. Sefer Dvarim deals so much with idolatry. Again, other things are touched, but so much with idolatry. Sefer Bamidbar now signs off with this idea, well, make sure that you don't, you know, in terms of the value of life and so on. And then Sefer Vayikra, the whole center of it, deals with the Arayot. So therefore, this coupled with those strong pronouncements that this causes tumah, this causes the earth itself to be defiled. So therefore, it's a question, I don't even say of math, it's a question of, you know, simply reading the Chumash to come to the conclusion that these really are the types of sins that one has to be very, very careful about. In source number 10, I'm afraid to say major themes because it's simply not true. This is the major theme of Bamidbar, but I'm saying it's the signing off. It's a conclusion statement, which is an extremely strong one. So I'm afraid to say major theme. So in Vayikra, we have two chapters that deal with Gilui Arayot. So it's not just that there is so much discussed about it; it's that strong statement. This is what's going to cause you to be vomited out of the land. This is what caused the land to be stained. This, which means it's those pronouncements which I'm looking at. This is why God kicked out the other nations, and this will cause you to be kicked out as well. Which means there are lots of other mitzvot, you know, chase away the mother bird and so on. But it doesn't say, but if you don't do this, you know, you're all going to be kicked out of the land. Which it's the value judgment which is being attached to it, which I think what is being understood over here. In terms of looking back at the flood becomes like a big mikvah. You look at the first three sins that took place in history. You have Adam's and Eve's sin, which I think is a sin of idolatry. If you eat this, you'll be like God. I hope all of you understand that there's nothing you can eat that will make you like God. And that idea that I think I can be like God if I eat, if I sniff, if I pop a pill or something, there's something just profoundly wrong about that. So therefore, the sin in Eden, I think, has this element of idolatry. And the Gemara actually says this. He goes, Adam was, uses the word of, it says, minhu, it means that he was a non-believer. You look at the sin that takes place, Cain and Hevel, that's a sin of murder. So therefore, we have Avodah Zarah, and then you get to the generation of the flood. Generation of the flood, again, the simple reading, which the Ibn Ezra really stresses, is one of a whole generation of sexual sins. That's the whole lead-up to it. So here you basically have those three sins, and what you have is exile, kicking out of the Garden of Eden. You have exile having to wander around, and then you have finally, as the result of the third sin, you have destruction, Chorban. So there is interesting. And by the way, then you start all over again, and you have building of the tower, which again may be this type of an Avodah Zarah, and then again you have a dispersion. You have, you know, being kicked out. So it's very interesting to read the early chapters of Bereshit, keeping in mind these later sensibilities that we realize. Good. Continue. In source number 10, the Gemara says, this is Gemara in Shabbat, Aflamed Gimel. The Gemara says as follows. Ba'avon shfichat damim beit hamikdash charav. The sin of spilling the blood is what destroys the temple. Ushchina mistaleket Yisrael, and it causes the shchina to go away. Shenemar, v'lo tachnifu, and so on, v'lo tatameh et ha'aretz asher tam yoshvim ba, asher anu yishochen b'tocha. Which means the conclusion over here, the rabbinic conclusion, is really a very tight reading of the text itself. The only thing which may be a little more interesting is that it talked about the Beit HaMikdash specifically as opposed to Galut Bichlal from Eretz Yisrael. And it says, Hatem matimota einchem yoshvim ba, ve'eini shochen bitocha. If you cause this type of impurity, then you can't settle there, which means all of Israel, and I will not be in your midst. Bavon gili arayot v'avodot chachavim, v'hashmatat shmitin v'yovalot. Now, why did it throw Shemitah in as well? Because it had no choice. Of course, the Pasuk says it, which means that was the other element which comes up again and again at the end of Sefer Vayikra. So it had to throw that in as well. Because of this, galut ba la'olam. Umgalin otan uban achareim v'yoshvim mekomam. And others will come and take their place. Shenemar, ki et kol ha'tevot ha'el asu anshei ha'aretz. Uktiv v'titma ha'aretz. V'fkod avona aleha. V'ktiv lo taki ha'aretz etchem. So, again, I'm not going to read all of the proofs over here, but they're all here. But what he's saying is something, just read the psukim. Read the verses, and these are the things which cause exile and cause destruction, and so on. Source number 11 is a Gemara in Shavuot. There's also a number of places in the Midrash Halacha that has the same teaching. V'chiper al ha-kodesh mitum'ot b'nei Yisrael. So again, this is talking about the Yom Kippur service, because you asked before what brings about healing. So here we have a sir, hold it. We can just do the Sir Lazazel. V'chiper al ha-kodesh mitum'ot b'nei Yisrael. So could I just bring the Sir Lazazel, like Sir Mishtaleach? Can I just do, you know, is there some kind of band-aid that I can use? Yesh li b'inyan ze lavi shalosh tum'ot. When it says that it heals from all kinds of tumah, there's two tumot. Tumat avodah zarah, v'tumat gilei arayot, v'tumat shechut damim. So he says, notice there are three types of tumah. So what's interesting about this, you know, we've said before that there are these three things that cause the destruction. And these three things we're being told here are all called tumah. It was pointed out before that these are also the three things that a person has to give up their life rather than do. Now, why give up your life is going to be a technical rabbinic analysis based upon all kinds of things, but now you realize that aside from the analysis, it actually has something else in common. It causes tum'ah. So something which causes this type of tum'ah is something which can't be done because the tum'ah is so profound. So he says, tum'at avodah zarah, tum'at gilarot, tum'at shvichot tamim. Avodah zarah hu omer, l'man tamei et mikdashi. Again, quoting the verse that we saw before. B'gilei arayot hu omer, v'shmarti mishmarti, v'ti yasot michkot ha'toivot, v'lot tamu bahem. B'shvichot tamim hu omer, v'lot tamei et ha'aretz, and so on. So the Gemara notices that these three things are all things which have the tum'ah. Now again, we know, based on that Malbim that we, which is right in front of us, that there are two types of tumah. So is it, I'm going to leave this as a question right now, is it really that when I bring the Sir Lazazel, does it heal everything? By the way, the answer could be yes. Yes, it heals everything. The question is, does it work by itself? Does it work with tshuva? And then let's leave that. What I want to go back to is just to regroup for a second, what we know, what we've seen, and then what I still want to do. What we've seen is that this idea, oh, there are these three sins which are really serious sins, they're actually connected. There's a common denominator. The common denominator is tumah. I would also be willing to say at this point something, which maybe was not obvious to us, that when it talks about avodah zarah, and this is does not easily fall in line with the Gemara that we just now saw, that when it talks about Molach, then it says, Donat tame et mikdashi. It seems to be the problem over here is an alien service. The alien service is what destroys the Beit HaMikdash because it's almost like misappropriation of something which was meant to be done. You serve God in the Beit HaMikdash. You don't serve God, you know, by doing Molach or any of these other idolatries. So therefore, that's a direct affront against the Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, when it came to the other sins, it spoke about the land itself. Now, as I said, the Gemara didn't say this, which probably somebody needs to think about this. Okay, I need to think about this at some point, because the Gemara actually did the opposite. What did the Gemara do? The Gemara said that it was murder which destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Now, the only thing that I could say off the top of my head, why would they would say that, could be because of a very specific historical event, which is written in the Navi, and that is the murder of Zechariah. The murder of Zechariah took place in in the Beit HaMikdash itself. So the Navi gets up and says, you know, you need to listen to God. You need to change your ways. You need to, boom. They killed him on the spot in the Beit HaMikdash. The Midrash, the Gemara and the Yerushalmi, it elaborates a little bit and says, oh yeah, that was Shabbat that day. Shabbat, it was Yom Kippur, right? He got up on Yom Kippur. He was giving his drusha on Yom Kippur and told all the people, you need to change your ways. And you know what? Somebody getting up and telling you need to change your ways could be really annoying. And they did not appreciate this, and therefore they murdered him. So therefore, I could say that I'm not talking about a general statement that murder destroys the Beit HaMikdash. I can say murder destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. So that would be one approach. What I do want to still try to get to is we have Rav Hirsch in source 14 and 15 has a lot to say over here. His statements are both in terms of the story of Cain itself and commentary on our section. But before we go there, source 13 may actually be a biblical perspective that combines all three sins together. And, you know, the source that source 13, source 12 was the Malbim, and the Malbim actually quotes this in the next couple of lines that I didn't include here, so I don't want you to think that I know all of the book of Yechezkel off the top of my head. But the Malbim directed us to this. If you look at source 13, Vayehi Dvar, this is Perek Kaf Bet, 22nd chapter. Vayehi Dvar Hashem Elai Lemor. Vatem ben Adam hatishbot et ir hadamim. So it talks about judgment of the city, which has become a city of blood. Vahodata et kol tovoteha. And then it uses that same word, toeva, which we had seen earlier with Arayot. Vamartem komar Hashem Elokim. Ir shofechet amim betocha lavo ita. Vasta gilulim ale l'tama. So here, within two verses, it combines together the worship of idolatry together with murder, and it comes back, b'damech asher shafachta ashamt u'b'gilayach asher asita tameta, which means that the blood you've spilled together with the idols that you've worshipped have caused this tuma, and you realize this is not going to be very good. It goes on to Meta Hashem Rabbah Hamuma, again, Laman Shifuchtam. I will admit that over here as well, it speaks about not keeping the Shabbat, but a little bit afterwards in Pasuk Tet, Anshei Rechil Yuba Laman Shifuchtam, that your chatter led about to the spilling of blood. And Zima is the sexual sins as well, which is going to be explained right afterwards. Ervat Av, Gilabach, Temehanida, Inubach, Veishet Eshet Re'ehu, Asat Toeva, Veishet Kalato, Tima Bizima, essentially going through the whole list of what you should not be doing. This is all the things that they did. So over here in this one chapter in Yechezkel, he does throw all of these things together, which again could be, and then at the end, what does it say in Tedvav? V'hafitzoti otach bagoyim, v'zertich ba'artzot, v'atimoti tum'atech mimech. So you ask, how do you heal this? You kick them out. You kick them out and spread them out, and you can't be here anymore. So this 22nd chapter of Yechezkel, now you read it, say, yeah, this is basically the conclusion. So I can now just go back to Rav Yochanan Torta and say, where did he get this from? You say, I read Yechezkel. Well, I read Yechezkel, and I read Bamidbar, or let's go in order. I read Vayikra, I read Bamidbar, I read Devarim, I read Yechezkel. And here it's warning that these are the things that are so severe, and here it's saying that you broke all those things that's so severe. So that's really easy. Again, on the other hand, you could just read through a whole bunch of other things in Navi, but this is concentrated and makes it easier. So Rav Hirsch, in source number 14, I actually had said a little of what he had said, but he speaks about, over here in 14 at least, of Cain having really very little awareness of the sin as much as awareness of what has happened to him. But he does have something along the way here, which I think is really important. Around halfway down, the last two words in the line are underlined, humagia. Leklal hechrach hachet. Eventually, he's going to get to understanding of the sin. Lomne shahara lachiv, not because of what he did to his brother. Elomne shahara latzmo, but what he's caused himself. Of yovshel kain lo nishtana, Unfortunately, I add, parenthetically, that Cain's character didn't change. Adayin hayam misugal lomar shomer achi anochi. He was able to still make that terrible statement, though. I'm a brother's keeper. Chatai gadol midai, omer Cain. Ilu ratzachti raket achi. Had I only killed my brother, yecholti lispolot chatai. I could have dealt with it. Go to his therapist and deal with it, get over it, anger issues. Ach lo yadati shayadei kach ratzachti et atzmi. But I never realized that by killing him, I actually killed myself. Which is very profound psychological analysis. And he goes into this a bit, and we're not going to do as much as he did. He writes, Neyeti arur vinad. I've become cursed and wandering. V'kipachti et kol zechuti b'olam v'chevra. And I no longer have any rights within society. Onesh ze nigzar al pi haTorah gam rotzeach b'shkaga. And he goes later on in the Torah, this will become the punishment for the person who kills by accident. Hona begalut, afapi shehunad, biirato hamitmedet negoel hadamit kayem, vayakol motzi hergeni. Just like the person who killed by accident is afraid of the goel hadam, that's the same fear expressed over here by Cain, that whoever finds me is going to kill me. So he is explaining this as part of the kapara, which means you took another life, and that other life now is not going to ever go home again. He's never going to be in his house again. He's never going to be able to sit around the table. Well, neither can you. That person is no longer part of society. Well, neither are you. Which means what he's doing over here is he's trying to explain how these laws are not just about punishment, but they're about some kind of attempt at kapara. He, in source number 15, Rav Hirsch tells us, why is this introduced? And this was really the sense that I had when I read this, which is why I was very happy, and that's why there's so much of this on the page, because it was what I was thinking about, that he says, let's look on page 4, you're about to enter into the land. Let's say that from the top of the page, ken shofchei damim ein lim damim. Anybody who kills takes a life, no longer, they forfeited their own life at that moment. They've sacrificed their right to exist. He has broken the social contract, right? It's very interesting language that he uses, that gave them the right to inherit the land. To explain this, he says, when God approached Noah after the flood, he made a deal with him. He gave him the seven mitzvot, or the six of them, as it were. And he said, you can't murder. You can't murder. If you murder, you have no right to live on this earth. And he says the same thing happens now when Am Yisrael is about to enter the land of Israel. God says this is a condition of entering into the land, which is just an interesting way of phrasing it, because it's not just, oh, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. No, these are the conditions of entering into the land. You can't practice Canaanite practices, including the sexual immorality which is being done. Why? Because then the land will kick you out. Which means it's not just that this is going to be a cause and effect, this will be a punishment. This is the condition I'm letting you enter the land. I say the same thing now about murder. You need to create a society which values human life. If you create a society that doesn't value human life, you will be kicked out. Not even as a punishment, but as a result. Because this was the condition. These are the laws that I set up that you can be here. You're not willing to follow it. Meaning, there's certain things in any contract that can have ramifications, okay? Punishment. That will set in some kind of a fine. That will send in some... No, but there's certain things that broke the contract. So that's what he's saying. This is a social contract over here. Cain kills Hevel. He breaks the social contract. He's forfeited his right to exist. And that's why he's saying, essentially, again, connected to what he said in the other place, he basically killed himself as well. I no longer have a life. Why? Because you took another life. You no longer have a life. Do we put him to death? Well, no. But he has sacrificed his life at this point. Am Yisrael is going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. There are rules. So now we realize, again, and I hope that this was building up the whole time and should be very, very clear. There are these three rules, three laws, which are really, really important. These are three laws which are the social contract which God gave us. You can't practice idolatry. That's why they were kicked out. You can't practice the sexual practices because that's why they were kicked out. You need to have value of human life because the land simply won't tolerate any other type of behavior. So then to have this idea that these are the reasons that you're going to be kicked out and spread around, yeah, Yecheskel got it. He looks around, yeah, that's what you're doing. This is what's going to cause. And that's where Yochim and Torta can say, this is what happened. Because these are the laws which break the contract. These are the laws which mean, that's it. You can't be here anymore. On top of this, there's this holiness aspect. The Shechina can't tolerate the taking of a life. And that's the parallel that I said earlier. Because you took the life, you expelled the Shechina from that person. The land of Israel is this living thing, and therefore a person does certain sins, it causes the Shechina to leave. I will just end by saying that at least according to one of the counters of the mitzvot, there's a positive mitzvah, every single day that you can perform, that you look around your house, you look around your possessions, and you say, is there anything here which is dangerous? Which means, you know, we know a very specific way of saying this. You need to put a thing on your roof to make sure nobody falls down. It's not just a roof. You can look around and say, okay, is there electrical outlet, which is a little loose right now, I think we have one or two of those. Is there electrical outlet in the house which, you know, makes some kind of noise? Yeah, no, you have to fix that. Is there something there in your possessions? Did you not check your brakes on your car? I'm saying all of these things are a positive commandment to look around your house and saying, is there something over here which could damage another human being? Which means, aside from the negative that, you know, if you do this, you may forfeit your life. No, there's a positive mitzvah. And the positive mitzvah is, let's make sure that we don't make those kinds of mistakes where an accident happened. Because some of the accidents are preventable. And I just want to save you a lot of money in therapy afterwards of having to say, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I fix this? I could have done something and this and so on. That, you know, we can save all that. But on top of all that, it may very well be a mitzvah taseh, a positive commandment, in order to take precautions that negative things don't happen.